It's my honor to be here today. It's my honor to be here to attend this study and, of course, to be asked to participate. It's my privilege to do so. Last evening, Brother Ronnie Wade pointed out some very sobering, startling statistics, pointed out the state of the church in our country over the past 60-plus years. And one stat that he gave was particularly concerning, the fact that over the past 23 years that the church in our country has netted only about 3 new congregations. And the conclusion, the undeniable conclusion from that, was that the church in America has not grown in the past 23 years very much from evangelism. And that is a concerning problem. That is a problem. And it should be something that we should all be concerned about in our effort to restore the New Testament church, not only in the pattern of worship and in doctrine, but also in evangelism. As we see throughout the New Testament, throughout the book of Acts particularly, we see that it is God's plan that His message be taken and His message be spread and shared. The early church did so on a daily basis. In Acts chapter 5 and verse 42, and daily in the temple and in every house, they did not cease teaching and preaching Jesus as the Christ. Acts 13, 49, and the word of the Lord was being spread throughout all the region. Acts 14, 7, very simply says, and they were preaching the gospel there. We find in Acts 17, verse 6, but when they did not find them, they dragged Jason and some brethren to the rulers of the city, crying out, these who have turned the world upside down have come here too. This was the reputation of the early Christians. This was the reputation of the early church. They had a reputation of going wherever they went, taking the word of God, and the enemies of the gospel considered that a threat, and they considered that turning the world upside down. Now, Saul was consenting to his death. In Acts 8 and verse 1, at that time a great persecution rose against the church, which was at Jerusalem, and they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. Taking the word of God was not something just the leaders did, but it was something that every Christian was involved in. And therefore, those who were scattered went everywhere preaching the word. And as was mentioned, there are various ways and various strategies that we can do this. And we need to be very concerned about how to do this most effectively, making sure we do it scripturally. And I certainly appreciate what Brett said concerning the television program. And as he mentioned it, appreciatively, I would say that I am here today because, in large part, of the television program and the efforts that were made by brethren who were concerned in spreading the gospel in areas where there wasn't a church. And I am thankful for that. And we have brethren who are conscientious of that today. We also need to be concerned about spreading the gospel within our own communities and within our own areas. And I have been asked today to discuss an evangelistic plan that we have implemented over the past 6 years in my home congregation in Wichita Falls, Texas. For lack of a better word, it's been deemed zip code evangelism. And as we'll note here in a little while, can be an appropriate name, but it's limiting as well. It's not necessarily zip code evangelism. It can be more flexible than that. But I really have 2 objectives this morning, and if you have questions, of course, we can discuss those later if I don't cover everything that you might have in mind. But I want to talk about some background information. Some background information that might be helpful to explain some of the motivation behind this particular plan. Also, I want to explain some of the logistics that are involved in the program, how to start it, how to implement it, and how to follow up. Some questions the last session on how to follow up. Maybe we can supplement some information regarding that. But I want to preface my remarks first by saying a few things concerning this plan. This plan is not really anything new. It's not a magic formula. It's not a silver bullet. It's not anything really that grand or impressive on the surface. There may be some details that are different than what has been done in the past, but it's not something that is original with us. I also want to recognize that I'm speaking to brethren here that have been in the trenches a lot longer than I have, that they have worked tirelessly. Many of you have dedicated years and years of your lives to spreading the gospel, and you have much more wisdom, much more experience than I have, and you've done it a more effective way than I have. And I certainly do not want to presume or imply to know better than many of my brethren, for whom I have a great deal of respect and appreciation. But I also realize that sometimes we get in a rut. We don't get the results. We don't see the results that we hope. We don't see the visible results that we pray for, and it can be discouraging. And sometimes it's helpful to hear approaches from brethren that have found success, and I hope that this might be encouraging to you in some way. I realize that this program of systematically getting the gospel into the hands of every home in our community may not be as effective in one area as it is in some areas. And that's just the nature of it. What may work in one area may be different in another area. That's the way it is with any method, whether it's the TV program or the mail-out program. So this may not be something that you want to implement, or it may be ideal for your area, for your city, for your community. So let's notice some of the background for this. In 2007, the two congregations in Wichita Falls, Texas, united together. They merged and they united into one congregation. This was a wonderful union that came about after several years of division. And along with this unification of the church and this precious peace that was enjoyed came a resolve by the leaders in the congregation to learn from the past mistakes and to stay focused on fulfilling our mission as the Church of Christ, which is to uphold the truth and to seek and to save the lost. And thus we set a 5-year goal, a goal of systematically putting the gospel into the hands of every home in our city. In a nutshell, we would do this by taking our city, basically, and dividing it up by zip code. That's how we chose to divide the town up. And we would target one area each year. And we contacted the same home directly with 4 different mailings throughout the year. Now, we wanted a plan that would accomplish our goals, and we had several goals. Given our past, we wanted, and of course, given our commission by the Lord, we wanted to have a plan that would promote the gospel, and we wanted a plan that would promote a unified effort and encourage the involvement of every member within our congregation. This is something that would not only bring unity, but would give every member, regardless of their age, and really regardless of their abilities, to get involved in some way. We wanted a plan that would increase the awareness in the community of who we are, what we believe. We wanted a plan that would increase the visitors to our services. We wanted a plan that would increase the number of Bible studies with non-members. We wanted a plan that would facilitate growth, not only numerically, but spiritually. And this concept of zip code evangelism was really based upon the marketing rule of repetition. Marketing's rule of seven is what it's called, and it's defined as takes on average seven contacts between a buyer and a seller before the buyer feels comfortable enough to do business with the seller. Now that is secular marketing. We understand that there is a difference, but there is some similarity. And we also recognize that we're not selling a product like those in the world. We're talking about sharing the gospel with someone very personal, having them change their lives. And so seven contacts may not be what it takes to convert somebody, but seven contacts is, on average, what it takes to get their attention. Seven contacts will get your foot in the door, on average. And so this program, this mail-out program that we're going to discuss, is only one aspect of an overall strategy. And we wanted to utilize it in a way that would work in concert with our other approaches. It wasn't just that we were putting all of our eggs in one basket, but that we wanted to use one method to help work with other methods in order to magnify and compound the impact. So we had, at the time, we also utilized the television program. We had gospel meetings. We had various advertisements. And then we were hitting the same homes four different times throughout the year with mail-outs. And we were doing this, hopefully, building an audience in the process. This screen up here has the breakdown. We had brochures that we would mail out along with a postcard that would solicit a Bible study. But each quarter we would mail a different brochure out, and it would rotate. And we changed this up. It was very flexible. We would rotate this in and out from year to year to see what would be the most, how we would have the most success or what would be the most effective. And we'll talk more about this in a moment. Now, Alan mentioned yesterday in the question and answer, he discussed about a past program that they used down in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to contact wayward members. And he mentioned the fact that several came back, but nobody came back after only one visit. And that's not surprising. We understand that it's a repetition that is the key. We understand that it takes several contacts in order to make an impression. And that's really what this is based upon. Now, let me talk about some of the logistics. First of all, in getting started with this, there's a couple of things that you have to do. First, you have to contact the post office. There is an involvement relationship that you have with the post office that's very important. And there are really two things that you need to have before you can even start the process. They have the applications, and there are fees involved. You apply for a nonprofit status. They have an application, and they have several requirements that you have to give them in order to prove that you are a religious organization. There's a one-time fee of $150, thereabouts. And then you also have to apply for a permit imprint, a number. And that's an annual fee of about $200. Then you have to acquire the addresses. And there are several ways you can do this. And I should preface my remarks here really by saying that this system is really a flexible system. It doesn't have to be done exactly the way that I'm presenting it or the way that we have done it. In fact, several congregations have taken it and have improved upon it, no doubt, throughout the country. These things can be flexible. These things can be changed to fit your budget, to fit your area. But I simply want to explain the procedures that we have adopted. And there are several ways you can acquire addresses in your area. There are several online subscriptions. We use a company that used to be called Polk City Directory. They've changed their name to SalesGenie.com, and there is an annual subscription fee for that of a little over $1,000, and they give you access to addresses anywhere in the country, and you can be very specific. It doesn't have to be zip code. You can also target streets. You can target, you can put in an address, and it'll give you a radius of all of the addresses around it, a mile or 2 miles around a specific location. So it can be as specific as you want it to be and as flexible as you want it to be. If you don't want the cost of the addresses or the labels, there's another way you can do this. And some congregations do this route where you can go directly to the post office and they have carrier routes that you can use and utilize. Every Door Direct Mailing, I believe, is what it's called. And it's a program that seems to be easy to use, but it's not, from my understanding, it doesn't put the personal addresses on there. It's more of a general address that they're delivered to. Some people may like mail that has their name written on it. It's more personal, but that's debatable. The materials that are needed, really, four various materials that are needed to do this. After you get all of the addresses and you get set up with the post office, you need the envelopes, and we have our permit number pre-printed on the envelopes along with our return address, and you can get these in bulk, and it's relatively inexpensive. The brochures, we have four different brochures again that we have mail out and that we utilize. One is on the Bible's inspiration, another is on the plan of salvation, another is on how to choose a church, and then another is simply introducing the Crestview Church of Christ, and it explains what we believe about worship, what to expect when they come, and what our worship is all about, and also some doctrinal matters on salvation. Then there is the cards. They're basically postcards that have information about our Bible studies and about our correspondence courses. And it's something that we put in the envelope and they sign their name and they send it back. And that's how we get our contacts. And then, of course, the labels as well. If you go the route we're taking where you print your own labels, then you would have to buy your own labels. Now, how this is implemented is not really difficult, but it takes some organization and it takes some planning. Basically, we go to the post office and we get those trays, those plastic trays that they hand out and they give you to mail your bulk mailing in. We get about 20 trays. Figure up the number of volunteers we anticipate in our congregation, about 20 individuals or 20 families. And we get about 20 of those trays, and we have volunteers divide the material into the trays. And for example, we mail out about 6,000, 5,000 to 6,000, sometimes 7,000 pieces every quarter. And so we would take 20 of those trays and we would put 300 pieces in each of the trays. 300 sheets, or 300 labels rather, 300 envelopes, brochures, and postcards. And we have just maybe five or six people from the congregation just prep those trays. And it takes about an hour to do. Doesn't really take that long to prep the trays. Then the trays are left at the building, and then at our next service we announce that the trays are ready. And this has already been explained. Our congregation is used to this routine, but we initially explain the procedure to the congregation. The trays are ready, and each individual or family that wants to take one of the trays, they sign out a tray, they take them home, and they return them. They affix the labels themselves on the envelopes. They stuff and they seal the labeled envelopes, and then they bring sealed and labeled envelopes back to the building. And we usually give them about a week to do that. And we emphasize initially, it's not something you take home and then you go mail it yourself. You take it home and you bring it back, because it has to be all mailed together. Don't take for granted that some people know that, because there's some things that you have to learn the hard way. The trays are to be taken and they're to be mailed together. In fact, you'd be surprised. This step number two, where we have affixed the labels to the envelopes first, because when people stuff the envelopes and then they seal the envelopes and then they decide, well, I'm going to label the envelopes, and then they realize that they've got a lot more envelopes than they have labels, and you have a bunch of wasted material that way. So there's a process, and we don't take for granted that people know, but we try to clarify very specifically. Now, once the mail has been sent, and we take it to the place of mailing, the bulk place, the mailing facility, there are a couple of keys to the success of this. It's kind of a waiting game. You're waiting for responses. And I want to talk about some of the keys of success, I believe, from this program. First is patience and repetition. The advantage of mailing to the same home four different times throughout the year is that we are more likely of contacting someone when they are more receptive. You know, they may not be interested in what you have to say the first time you send them something, or even the second or third time, but maybe by the fourth time you're hitting them at the right time and they're willing to pay attention, and maybe they're willing to write in or send in the card. So the odds of increasing the odds increase of finding someone interested when we use repetitious mailings. And one of our goals was to get our name out there in the community. So when people start looking to attend somewhere, then at least we will be in their mind. In fact, we had this happen. The first year we did this, and this is why it takes patience, is because it's not going to be something that happens overnight. It's sowing seed, and you have to wait for it to grow. But the first year we did this, we had around 50 people sign up for a Bible study. But we had no visitors to our congregation from the mail-out. We had no visible results. We didn't have anyone even show up at one of our services. So that was deflating. It was very discouraging. But the next year, we had a man come for the first time. He wasn't on our list, or he was on our mail-out list, but he wasn't in our lead list because he had never written in. But he came because he was ready to start going back to church, and he chose our congregation because he got some of the mail a year ahead of time. Kind of like what Cliff was mentioning about people. They may lay dormant for 10 years or so until the time is right. So be patient, and you'll see that there is a lag effect, but you have to be patient enough to see it through, and repetition is the key. But another key to this is the follow-up. I suppose it's this way with any program, whether it's the television program or the mail-out program. If we aired the TV program and there was no one to make contact with those leads, then it's not going to be as effective as it needs to be. And the same is with this. When we mail out material to people, chances are these brochures are not going to convert someone in and of themselves. But they will get our foot in the door, but if no one is there to walk through the door, it's not effective. So let's notice some things about the mail out or the follow-up of this program, and maybe we can answer some questions about this later. But when we get a card in the mail, and here I brought some of the cards. Over the past 5 years, we've had around 400 to 500 people sign up for a correspondence course, and here's a stack of the cards that they send in. We send one of these cards in the mail with the brochure, and they send this back to us. And one of the first things we do when we get this, when we go to them, is we take this invitation card with us. And it's an invitation for them to sign up, but it's also really an invitation for us to go knock on their door. And when we hold this up to, we knock on the door and they come out, and we show them this card and they see their handwriting, their demeanor changes. It's as if we are transformed from an unwelcome solicitor to a welcomed guest. Oh yes, I invited you here. I remember I sent that in. So that is an opportunity for us to break the ice, tear down some wall, and we take this with us and we let them know how much we appreciate their interest in our Bible study. And we explain, even though that this is a correspondence course and they're not really expecting us to knock on their door, it's through the mail. I don't know that Clint can say if he remembers anything different, but I don't remember anyone being offended that we came to visit them. In fact, they were impressed that we did. And we always try to hand deliver the first lesson. And that's a key. Just hand deliver the first lesson. Now, for the most part, there may be a few exceptions, but we have met most people in this stack. And that is helpful because not only does it give us a chance to explain the process, have you ever taken a Bible study? If they have, then we can ask them what they've studied. If they haven't, we can explain our process and how this works. And it allows us to get to know them better. And this is how we usually present it. We're here to introduce ourselves so that when you have questions and you want to write in, you'll know who you're dealing with, and we can correspond that way. And it puts a personal touch to it, a personal face, and it stands out from perhaps other material that they might get in the mail. So this invitation postcard is a key. Then we also take a packet along with we just have these little envelopes that contains the material. We have an opening letter that explains the process. We have the first lesson, and we use the Know Your Bible correspondence course by Gene Tope. And we have the first lesson in there, along with an envelope that has a stamp already on it and our address. So there's really no cost to them past the first initial stamp that they use to send in the card. So we hand deliver this welcome pack, and it's in their hands. These correspondence courses also have spaces for them to write down more information, like their email and their phone number. And so when they send it back in, we put that information in our database. So when we follow up on them with them later, we have various ways to do so, through email or through phone calls, or we go by and see them again. Depending on how well they're doing in the lesson, or or it's kind of like Ronnie said, we have to assess the lead quality, whether it's a good lead or not, and where they're at or their interest level. We will try to go by and between the third and the fourth lesson and see them again, follow up and see if they have questions and how they're doing and how well they're liking the course. And then after the final lesson, we deliver a Bible along with the sixth lesson. We give it back to them. And on here, we actually offer the course with the promise that they will receive a free Bible when they complete it. So we hand deliver the Bible, and the purpose of that course is to continue to follow up and offer other study options. And ideally, at this time, you want to be able to study with them face to face or an open Bible study of some kind. That's the ideal. But that's pretty much it. And it's not real complicated. Like I said, it's not something that's original with us. Brethren have done mail-outs for many, many years, and many have found success with them, and some have not. But I think the key to our success is the patience, the repetition, the repetitious factor, working in concert with other approaches, and the follow-up, having someone to follow up and to work the leads. It has gotten our foot in the door, and we were able to enjoy some success from it. There are questions about, if you have questions about the cost of it and all of that, we can discuss that in the question and answer. But before I stop, I want to mention four observations that we have made about this from this program. First of all, it's apparent that there are still Christians who are willing to work, that there are still members within our congregations that are willing to spend and be spent. There are older sisters and older brothers and young people who are still willing to do whatever is asked of them, whether it be to go by and visit or stuff envelopes. It may be boring at times, but when you think of the potential, the contacts and the leads and the conversions and the changed lives, everyone is excited. And it is a unifying task for that very reason. They have the motivation many times, but they all they really need is the direction. And as preachers of the gospel or leaders in the church, we have congregations of people that you may think are not very motivated, but if you present them with some ideas, doesn't have to be this one, but something for them to do, you'll be surprised how motivated they are to do it. And that motivation will help you as well. You'll be motivated, and you'll fuel each other. Another observation is that there are still people in our own communities that are interested. I'm convinced of this. Now, I had no idea when we started this how many people in our communities, down our streets, would be interested. But it was surprising. People are interested in studying the Bible. Now, they may have their mind made up. Many of them may have their preconceived ideas. Some people are searching, though. Some people are searching for the truth. Some people don't even know they're searching, but they are. And people are still interested. Sometimes we labor under the impression that people aren't interested. In America, people aren't interested in our communities. People aren't interested in our neighborhoods, but they are. I'm reminded of the story about two shoe salesmen who went to Africa to sell shoes. And one of them wired back, and this was years ago, and he said, terrible market, horrible prospect. Nobody here wears shoes. The other one wired back and said, wonderful market, tremendous prospects. Everyone here needs shoes. I told this story in front of Ron this summer, and he came up to me and he said, you know, I thought you were going to say, wonderful market, tremendous prospects, everyone here needs, or everyone here has feet. And I thought, well, that'd work pretty good too. But everyone here, everyone in our society, everyone in our communities, our neighborhoods, they have a need. We look around, we say, they're not interested in the gospel. We ought to be saying, they need the gospel. Look at their need. And there are still people that are looking for it. Something else that we are reminded of in approaches like this is that the gospel still works. That the gospel still has the power. In fact, it is not a plan or a program that will save people. It's the gospel. The gospel still has the power to convict and convert. And this program simply is a tool to get the gospel into the hands of people. And if we are looking at it as a magic bullet or a silver bullet or whatever you want to call it, the gospel is the key. The gospel is what changes and what converts and what will ground people and keep people in the church. And with that said, something else I have noticed is that there is still more effectiveness in personal evangelism. As successful as this has been or can be, it's not nearly as successful as one man teaching another man the one gospel. Why do people choose a church? Statistics vary on this, but one survey came up with these results. 9% of people say they choose a particular church because of the building itself, the beauty, the architectural beauty of the building. Kind of a shallow reason, but that's why people go. People are shallow. 18%, it's because it's close to their home. Convenient. 14% say that they go where they go because of a previous church affiliation. They were raised that way. We understand. We run into that quite a bit. Now, this is a little bit discouraging, but this is what the survey said. 3% says that they go where they go because of the preacher and the preacher's personal visit. Doesn't seem very high. I would like to think it was higher, but that's what it says. But I'm not surprised about this one. 56% of this particular survey say they go where they go because of direct or indirect contact from a member. So when we present this to our congregation, we emphasize that this is an opportunity for us all to be involved, for us all to get together, to work, and to do what we can. But it cannot replace your responsibility personally to take and to share the gospel with your friends and your family and your neighbors. You see, the Lord didn't lay the task of evangelism upon machinery. He laid it upon men. And all the mass media and all of the mail outs, however helpful, cannot substitute for one saint communicating the one gospel to one sinner. And you might be thinking, well, you just diminished the importance of having a mail-out program. Well, I meant to. This is helpful. This does work. But it is not the best way. It is not the only way, and it is simply a supplemental way for us to reach out and to meet people, to get into their homes with the hopes of changing their hearts through the gospel. And that's all I have.